For WMRA News, I'm Matt Bingay. New figures from the Deportation Data Project detail a steep rise in the number of immigration arrests in 2025 in Virginia. Multiple court cases could impact Virginia voters and their election districts. Our political analysts Jeff Shapiro and Michael Pope recap the week in politics. And many people gathered on the streets of Front Royal yesterday for a chance to see royalty. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, May 1st. New data from the Deportation Data Project details the rise of immigration arrests in Virginia, and Kiris Manzanares with partner station VPM News explains.
New data shows arrests by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement jumped from about 1,600 arrests in 2024 to roughly 11,000 in the most recent year. Data also shows that from January 2025 to early March of this year, 13 children under the age of 6 were detained by ICE in Virginia. Legal aid advocates have pointed to the rising arrests in the Commonwealth being fueled in part by expanded cooperation between ICE and local law enforcement as a result of intergovernmental and 287G agreements. In Central Virginia, over 7,300 people were booked at the Riverside Regional Jail Authority in Prince George County in accordance with their agreement with ICE from January 2025 to early April of this year. The jail serves as a 72-hour holding facility for ICE.
Kiris Manzanares reporting. King Charles II and Queen Camilla attended a block party and parade in Front Royal yesterday as one of the final stops of their state visit. WMRA's Aisha Pirga was there and spoke to a few people who spent hours waiting for a chance to see the royal couple.
An immense number of visitors showed up at the Riverside town, and the lines to get to the parade route seemed to keep going. Jessica Paget came from nearby Linden. Her sons attend school in Front Royal, which was canceled today, as many local roads were closed for the royal visit.
So I was like, oh, well, I guess I have to take off work because they don't have school. I was like, well, let's at least go try and see, you know, what we can see.
Her son Liam wanted to see the king and queen as well.
You do want to see the king and queen? Why? Why is that special?
Because me, I've not seen them before.
Jill and Butch Rutherford grew up here in Front Royal. When Jill found out that the king would be visiting,
I really didn't believe it. I thought it was a joke, honestly. Yeah, it was just hard to believe that, you know, the king would and his wife would want to come to Front Royal, so it's a real honor.
Her husband, Butch, says that it was exciting.
To see that, the king is going to come to Front Royal and, you know, understand he's really into the environment, so I guess that's why a good reason he was coming.
The king has received numerous awards for his environmental work, including a Global Environmental Citizen Award from Harvard Medical School's Center for Health and Global Environment. As crowds gathered in Old Town waiting for the royals, there were sounds of helicopters flying by. People began to cheer, and we saw police in motorcycles, then armored vehicles, and on our side of the road, there was Queen Camilla waving.
They rode by and waved. The window was down, and I got to see Camille.
That's Marianne Barciano, a Front Royal resident. She says she follows the royal family on the internet, and when she found out they would be visiting,
I was so surprised and happy.
She had waited on the sidewalk for almost 5 hours and caught her glimpse at royalty. For WMRA News, I'm Aisha Pugia.
Virginia has more time to comply with a federal court ruling in a major voting rights case. More people will be allowed to vote after the changes, as Dean Mirshahi with partner station VPM News reports.
In Virginia, any felony conviction takes away your right to vote. Advocacy groups say more than 200,000 people can't vote because of a conviction. But in January, a judge ruled that this policy violates a federal law from 1870. The law barred Virginia from taking people's voting rights away for convictions other than common law felonies in 1870, which includes crimes like murder and arson. So the judge gave state election officials until May 1st to stop blocking people with convictions outside of this group from voting. But after reaching an agreement with the plaintiffs, Virginia now has until June 1st to make changes. Tati King was one of the plaintiffs in the legal challenge.
When I see something wrong, especially if it's going against me, I'm going to speak out on it.
Election officials are working to update the state's voter registration system and take other steps to implement the court order.
Dean Mirshahi reporting. Are Virginia gun laws something that the rest of the country should emulate? Radio IQ's Michael Pope tells us that's what two of the Commonwealth senators think.
The Virginia Plan was the name of an effort in Philadelphia led by Virginians to create a national government with three branches tempered by checks and balances. That was in 1787. In 2026, it's the name of a proposal from Senators Mark Warner and Tim Kaine. Their version of the Virginia Plan is to have federal law mirror Virginia gun laws. That's for things like prohibiting ghost guns, safe storage requirements, and red flag laws. Here's how Kaine describes it.
Mark and I kind of have this argument. Listen, if we can do this in Virginia, where the NRA has had its headquarters for many years, we ought to be able to do it nationally.
The NRA's headquarters is in Fairfax County, and NRA spokesman Justin Davis says the federal government should not emulate what he calls an extreme radical gun control agenda.
This is moving further away from the conversation about what is and what isn't constitutional to what's best for a fundraising email for these far left groups and what placates the most extreme people in the party. So, you know, we're prepared for that. We're getting ready to sue Abigail Spanberger in court the second she signs her gun control package here.
The governor is currently considering the fate of a proposed assault weapons ban that's currently on her desk. Her deadline is May 22nd. I'm Michael Pope.
A federal court has allowed construction on the Mountain Valley Pipeline's 31-mile Southgate extension to begin. The Southern Environmental Law Center and Appalachian Mountain Advocates had challenged Clean Water Act permits issued in Virginia and North Carolina for the project. The U.S. Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals issued temporary stays on construction in March, but on Tuesday, they allowed work to go ahead while the case is underway. The Southgate project will extend the natural gas pipeline from Virginia's Pennsylvania County to Rockingham County, North Carolina. A key data center developer has pulled out of a massive Prince William County Digital Gateway project. Compass Data Centers had attempted to secure county permits for over 800 acres in the 2,100-acre development. A recent court ruling invalidated zoning approvals. The developer and the county will not pursue an appeal. Bloomberg reports that local opposition and state-level discussions about ending data center tax incentives contributed to the decision. Multiple court cases could impact Virginia voters and their election districts. Politics analyst Jeff Shapiro and Michael Pope recap the week in politics and state government.
Starting with that vote last week for a constitutional amendment to change Virginia's congressional districts, Jeff Shapiro, that vote was supposed to be certified today, but the courts are blocking that. When are we going to get some kind of resolution on this?
Bottom line, Michael, the voters of Virginia have expressed their preference by a somewhat slim majority, and now the matter is up to seven justices of the Virginia Supreme Court. Those are the votes that have to be swayed at this point. The court has not indicated when it will decide on this anti-Trump gerrymander. All of this, of course, in response to the president's push in red states to carve out extra red districts to preserve the Republican majority in the House of Representatives. The likelihood of this certification today seems to have been greatly diminished by the inaction of the court, but that doesn't mean the justices aren't deciding this. And there seems to be something approaching conventional wisdom that the general silence of the majority, 5 of 7 justices, during the give and take, the oral give and take, may be an indication that the court is fully prepared to defer to the legislature on this. In other words, bow to the Democrats' wishes. Stay tuned, and tick tock, tick tock, tick tock.
So from one Supreme Court to the other, in Washington, the U.S. Supreme Court is gutting the Voting Rights Act. What's the influence, if any, here in Virginia?
Well, this is a further weakening of the Voting Rights Act, which covers Virginia because of its long history of racially discriminatory voting and election practices. There seems to be a divided opinion on this, that it could mean difficulty for minority-held seats, either in the Congress or in the Virginia legislature. But then there are those who see this as a likely affirmation of existing minority-held seats. It's important to point out that, for example, in the case of the two congressional districts represented by people of color, the fourth and the third, Jennifer McClellan, Bobby Scott, respectively, these are not majority-minority districts. These are not majority black districts. These are what the law regards as majority influence districts. Long story short, that means these are members of Congress who have demonstrated an ability to win the votes of non-black white voters. This may go a long way towards preserving, if you will, the status quo in future redistrictings. Of course, this is supposed to be the handiwork of that bipartisan commission that Virginia voters insisted on by overwhelmingly approving in 2020 a constitutional amendment to essentially remove redistricting power from the legislature.
So the governor is facing yet another deadline, May 22nd. That's to take action on bills that are currently on her desk. What exactly is she looking at right now?
There are about 40 bills, and some of these are very consequential. The weed sales bill, union rights for public employees, some gun restrictions. Not sure what's going to happen here. The governor can sign them, veto them, or allow them to become law without her signature. But there is another option here, one that insiders are monitoring, and that is, what might she try to tuck into the state budget when and if the legislature sends something to her? It is not unusual, certainly in recent years, for the budget to become sort of an omnibus bill in which all sorts of things that have nothing to do with spending are tucked.
All right, that's all the time that we've got for this week. My name is Michael Pope, and we have been joined by politics analyst and UVA scholar Jeff Shapiro. Talk to you next week.
Good weekend to you.
There's a shortage of water plant operators nationwide, and that's expected to grow as more workers retire. Radio IQ's Roxy Todd spoke to several people who treat the water we drink about this relatively unknown career.
Caleb Taylor, who runs the New River Valley Regional Water Authority, says there's good job security for water operators. Though automation can assist workers, he doesn't think these jobs will ever be entirely replaced by artificial intelligence.
It's something that it does require human interaction and an ability to notice when there is a problem and step in and take care of getting it resolved. So it's something that AI can't do.
Taylor's plant is fully staffed with 19 workers. He says they recruit employees through word of mouth from current workers. Until they find their way to this job, they often don't know this career exists. Most utilities across the Commonwealth need more workers.
We're all in the same boat of there's not enough of us to go around that can, you know, can fix it faster than it's falling apart.
Josh Hodge runs the water treatment plant in Pulaski and came to this job in 2012. The town paid for his training. Virginia Tech has a week-long course every summer. Taylor is one of the instructors.
The people that are in this field love what they do, and they take a lot of pride in it. They don't go and seek recognition for it, but they are really proud of what they do for their communities.
In Radford, I'm Roxy Todd.
And finally, as the weather gets warmer, the chances of getting tick-borne illnesses like Lyme disease or alpha-gal syndrome increase. Dr. Kane Mayers says if you find a tick on you that hasn't embedded itself, there's no infection risk. But he says knowing what type of tick you were bitten by is important.
If the ticks look different, that means they're a different species. But the characteristic coloring that they have does help determine what species of tick it is.
According to the Virginia Department of Health, only 3 of the 16 tick species found in Virginia can spread illness to humans. American dog ticks can spread Rocky Mountain spotted fever, deer ticks can cause Lyme disease, and Lone Star ticks have the potential to give people an allergy to most meats and dairy. And that does it for the WMRA Daily for Friday, May 1st. I'm Matt Bingay. Have a great weekend.